Kind of like this no show prep show. I'd never make a dime doing it. And I would totally go bankrupt. And my family would starve. But man, what a cool way to make a living. I just sit here, don't read anything, talk, tell you what I think, go back to bed. It's kind of awesome. Oh, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Doug Franz. Thank you very much for making Doug Franz Unplugged a part of your day. My family greatly appreciates it. You have found the only podcast in the entire world that is totally devoted to focusing on four major sports franchises, four minor league franchises, and Division I athletics in the state of Arizona. And then who knows what else, depending on what comes up. Hi, if you're new to the show, my name's Doug, and that is not normally what this show sounds like. But I've kind of taken the week off. I had about 4 months of vacation, mind you, at the end of last year. But other than, you know, an occasional Saturday, I've been working 7 days. I don't say this, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs do this. So this isn't like, hey, I'm whining. But I've been working about 6.5, 7 days a week, somewhere in the neighborhood of anywhere between 14 and 20 hours a day for about 6.5 months, something like that. And so I just decided I'm just shutting it down this week. Plus, it's weird. I thought this was the perfect week to do it with the All-Star game. And yet, I mean All-Star week, you know, no Diamondbacks. Yet I've got, like, if I was prepared, I would have a totally full show today. It's crazy how much stuff there is to talk about and stuff that you might not know that's going on or big news locally that affects things nationally. Let's start with the Cardinals. I don't have any great stories about my day. All I did was kind of work as far as the business side of things. I had massive internet problems, and I got this thing from Cox that I don't even know if I need, but it's working. So I got it, and I was hooking that up and talking to other people. I just did all kinds of, basically, if you're an entrepreneur, all the busy stuff that wastes your time, I did all that today. That's got to get done, but it just drives you crazy. Yeah, so that was my day. So I normally, if you're new to the podcast, I normally start Unplugged, talking about family, talking about my day, kind of getting a little feedback from you. I also, this week, want to spend a ton of time reading your feedback. So I've got a lot of it stored up, and I'm going to get to that on Thursday and Friday of this week, because Wednesday will be, you know, tomorrow's show will be a little bit more about the All-Star game, but a lot of feedback, like Thursday will be feedback day, and I'll just be reading a bunch of emails and tweets from the past week or so when I had asked previously about feedback. I think the number one story to talk about is the Rodney Hudson news that broke today. It actually broke while I was on my Monday hit. Hopefully you remember to listen. 1580 The Fanatic invites me to come on every Monday at 1 o'clock in order to promote the podcast. I haven't had a chance much to promote the podcast though on 1580. So I don't know if you missed out on that, but I really enjoy doing that. And I enjoy the fact that Steve is a member of the Unplugged Army, the host. And I really like Izzy. I think the producer of that show is an up-and-coming person in radio. And I'm really impressed with his work ethic and his desire to be great. I just totally gravitate to people like that. But anyway, while I was on the show, the news broke that Rodney Hudson has decided to come back and play the center for the Arizona Cardinals. Doesn't get much bigger than that, really. If you are a hardcore football fan, you know how huge that is. If you're kind of, hey, I'm a bit like, if you describe yourself as a big Cardinals fan and you love football, but maybe the X's and the O's and when people start talking about, well, he's a 3 technique and a 4-3 under, you know, and you start hearing some, they're in quarters coverage, 0, you know, blah, blah, blah. If that starts to lose you a little bit, I'm kind of fascinated by that stuff. I consider football chess with 300-pound pieces. I told an offensive coordinator that one time. He thought that was the best description of football. And I don't say that to brag, hey, look at me, I impressed an offensive coordinator. It's just cool that somebody that knows that much said, yes, that's what we're doing here. And I got really lucky. I don't know if I ever fully told you the story, but when I was in Kansas City, I got to know Al Saunders, the offensive coordinator, to the point where he actually would invite me into his office once a year during the summer, and we would go over the offense, and I would learn different calls. I would learn different quarterback checks. I learned to watch film and what he's seeing. It was a phenomenal education into the game. And keep in mind, that's just one day a year. So it's not like a true football, somebody with a true high football IQ who lives it and studies it every day in the advancements. It's just me, you know, coming along and getting taught in kind of a flash in the pan way of learning. So I picked up a ton, but obviously I'm sure that there's a ton that sifted through the cracks that I don't even know, you know, when you go through something like that. But Rodney Hudson has an incredibly high football IQ. I believe he's better at diagnosing defenses than Kyler Murray. That is totally a personal opinion. Nobody at the Cardinals has told me I'm right on that. Nobody on the Cardinals has told me I'm wrong on that, though, either. I know he is heavily involved in DJ Humphreys' abilities. DJ Humphreys totally relies on a guy with that level of football IQ in the middle. And Rodney Hudson has, you know, almost been telling him what to do for the last year. And if you notice how well DJ Humphreys played last year, I hate to say it, DJ Humphreys isn't just a stupid man. I'm not saying that at all. But his football IQ is not nearly where Rodney Hudson's is. So Rodney sees things that DJ doesn't. And then he can make checks at the lines, or he can get DJ into a better spot where DJ isn't thinking, which is Humphreys is one of those players with just tell me who I need to block and I'll get the job done. When he's got a bunch of things to decipher, he's not as good physically. And you take that challenge away from him with a guy like Rodney Hudson. So when you talk about, and then Justin Pugh, when healthy, has had a good Cardinals season. He's not great, but the only thing I don't like about Justin Pugh is how you're going to rip this. Sometimes I say things and I know I'm going to get ripped for it. I don't like people that speak positively just to make things go away. You know, he keeps saying, I always believe in the men in here. I always believe this. I always believe that. Okay. But it's not true. You know, I mean, things aren't getting done there. You guys have underperformed for 3 years. So why are you telling me that, you know, good things are on the horizon? Now, you could, maybe it's just your outlook on things. You know, the Cardinals have been an organization that every year from Steve Wilks forward has been an improvement. Every year under Cliff Kingsbury, they've won more games than they did the year before. For a lot of people, it's like, what else do you want? That's how you grow a franchise. I look at expectations, and when I say expectations, there's two ways that can be thrown back, or there's one way that can be thrown back in my face. Hey, your expectation is wrong. So why should you worry about us? You know, because we're winning more games than we did last year. We're the ones that are improving. Just because we're not improving at the rate you want, well, who are you? You know, that's a totally fair and legitimate response. The reason why I say expectations is I'm looking at someone like Steve Keim. And I said 2 years ago, he put a playoff team on the field that was coached out of the playoffs with bad challenges, bad timeouts, bad plans, players not ready. I shouldn't say players, it's their job to get themselves ready, but schemes that weren't ready or decisions that were made on players that were bad decisions, things like that. So this might, I think they became a playoff team yesterday. I think that'll be the same thing. I think they'll get to the playoffs now and lose. But it doesn't fix rushing the passer. It doesn't fix the middle linebacker situation. It doesn't fix the cornerback situation. So I have so little faith in the Cardinals defense that I don't see how they're going to fare well this year. But I immediately change my opinion on the offense as soon as Rodney Hudson says he's coming back. Now, the why has not been announced, and I'm really interested in what the why is. Why were you not going to play before, and why are you coming back now? I think this is an important thing because if he's coming back for the wrong reasons, then how much can you count on him? I mean, how much success is he really going to bring to the table if he's just there to avoid paying back the money? The way the contracts work in the NFL is if you receive a signing bonus, that money is, in a sense, it's kind of like prorated salary. It's your salary over years given to you in a one lump sum. The catch is the team divides those years out over 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, whatever the length of the contract is. So for an easy way to do the math, let's say there's a big difference between, let's say, 2 3-year $16 million contracts. One $16 million contract could be $3 million a year and a $13 million signing bonus. Well, now, for the player, he gets $14 million in year one, 13 in a signing bonus, and one in his salary. That's awesome. $14 million. There you go. For the team, they get the benefit of prorating that signing bonus over the course of the 3 years, so therefore, their salary cap hit is lower. So they get to take all $1 million a year. That comes off the salary cap each year, and then they divide out the 14. I should have chosen a number that fits better into three, but so they take the $1 million salary in year one and the $4.6 million portion of the bonus for year one, and now you come up with a $5.67 million cap hit. So even though, and I'm just going to say it's Rodney Hudson, Rodney Hudson might have gotten paid $14 million in year one, the team only has a $5.67 million cap hit. So everybody wins. The problem is at the end of the contract. What always happens at the end of these deals is the Rodney Hudson, the player portion, is upset because he remembers in year one when he got paid $14 million a year, and now in year three, he's only getting paid $1 million. So he's upset. I'm only getting $1 million here, and I get no guaranteed money next year. So I might hold out if you don't give me a new contract. While the Cardinals, on the other hand, it doesn't really work great for them because while they're paying $1 million, they still have to take another cap hit of 5.67 because that signing bonus from year one had to be spread out evenly over all 3 years. Sometimes that brings both sides back to the table. Sometimes the football team says, hey, let's negotiate something so I can get your cap number down. And the player's thinking, great, that's more money coming to me in the form of a signing bonus or something like that. Well, Rodney Hudson, if you retire after receiving a signing bonus, the team can come back and take your signing bonus. And when I say take it, meaning you pay them back. You owe them that money they paid you. And how many times could I come to you and say, hey, you got overpaid 3 years ago. Pay me that money back. And you're like, wait, what? That money's accounted for. So even though Rodney Hudson's a big millionaire, it's not like you just go back to the bank and want to pay back probably, I don't know, I'm going to prorate it in my head, but about $7 million that he would owe the Cardinals. So you actually lose money by not playing. You go back, you get your contract, you get paid to play, or you pay them to sit at home. So I see what that's not motivation, though, to win a Super Bowl. That's just, well, I didn't want to lose $7 million, so I don't feel like playing, but I'm here. There's a third thing that could be happening, which really isn't good, and that is a hold-in. The NFL and the NFLPA, in their last collective bargaining agreement, basically outlawed holdouts. And if Rodney Hudson doesn't report to practice, he gets fined. It used to be the team fined you. Well, what was the first thing when both sides agreed to a new deal? Waive the fines. Now, those fines are issued by the NFL, so you can't waive them. So if you miss any practice time, you've got to pay the league. Well, Rodney Hudson doesn't want that, so he can show up, but then he can claim he's hurt. Listen, I'm hurt. My ankle hurts. I can't put any weight on my ankle. Well, then we can't give you any more money, can we? Because it'll hurt your ankle. Well, money's not as heavy, So if you directly deposit it into my account, I don't have to carry it. Suddenly my ankle will feel better. You know, it's kind of one of those deals. I don't know if that's what he's doing. We'll see when we get to training camp, how active is Rodney Hudson? Does he jump right back in, or is he pulling a Holden and he still wants a new contract? I don't like it because he just got a new contract. Don't sign a deal if you're not man enough to stick it through. A lot of people disagree with me on that. There's a lot of people in sports that say you've got to get as much money as you possibly can. Use every ounce of leverage that you've got. I agree with that when you're not signed. I agree with that when you're a free agent. I think you're going back on your word when you've signed a document that says this contract is good enough for me during this part of the year. And now because it worked against me in later years, I don't like it. So now I'm going to do things to supposedly use my leverage. So let's say you're a football player. You sign a new contract in which you get a $20 million signing bonus. Boom. You get handed a check for $20 million after taxes, of course. Then, first practice, you tear your ACL, you're out for the year. First practice the next year, you break a bone in your leg, you're out for the year. Third year of the contract, the team's sick of waiting for you, they cut you. Well, you still got to keep all that money. That contract worked in your favor. So it's not like you're willing to give that money back when the contract worked in your favor. So now suddenly, when you outplay the contract, or you just don't feel like playing, you now demand more money to come play. I don't think that's fair. You signed the contract. You put your last name on a document that said, this works for me. And then when the gamble either didn't work or didn't work as well as you had wanted, now you've got a problem with it. And keep in mind, I appreciate you listening to Doug Franz Unplugged. There are a ton of people in the sports world that disagree with everything I just said. They said that, but they think the time of your word is past or this doesn't matter. They'll use the phrase, well, it's a business. And somehow, because it's a business, that means your word doesn't matter anymore. To me, looking a person in the eye and shaking their hand means I'm going to do my end of the bargain. And I do expect one of two outcomes. You to uphold your end of the bargain or accept the fact I will have zero dealings with you the rest of my life. I'll still pray for you. I don't want you to die, but I'm not going to do anything business-wise with you and you're not going to be my friend because accept it. You're an untrustworthy person. You had your opportunity. So I don't know where you go on that. Just know you're in the minority if you're on the island with me. But if you just want the Cardinals' point of view, oh, yeah, this is a big deal. This is a big deal. I think it's worth three wins. There's a very good chance that this team just went from 6-11 to 9-8. I mean, he might be worth three wins. And you might say, there's no way one guy is worth three wins. Well, to me, he makes Kyler better. He makes DJ Humphreys better. And that in tune dramatically makes the offense better. And I think this is an offense that's going to have to outscore people. I don't think the defense is going to be that great. So this is a big deal. This is a big deal. All right, coming up next. I think the second biggest story is the Suns. DeAndre Ayton remains. But does he really want to be here? That's coming up on Doug Franz Unplugged, vacation version. Even though I joke about being Commander-in-Chief, I think we would both agree your home and your finances are pretty much none of your Commander-in-Chief's business. And I realize that. Interest rates are a little crazy right now, but if you're in the market to buy a home, you've got to get a mortgage no matter what. So who can you trust to get you the best offer now but still take care of you later? In my opinion, that's Ideal Home Loans, and that's why they have the mortgage on my home, 602-899-7000. They have an interest rate guarantee. You agree to a deal. Once your mortgage is set, if it drops a half a percentage point 6 months later or at any point past that, then they contact you and say, hey, interest rates are down. We can get you a better offer. Would you like a new mortgage? If you say yes, we'll waive all lender fees. I think that's really huge. They're always watching and monitoring the situation to see if you qualify. So even though it's kind of scary to take out a new mortgage now, they're always going to have your back if a better one comes open later. 602-899-7000 or go to idealhomeloans.com. Well, it became official yesterday. DeAndre Ayton's a member of the Phoenix Suns. He was actually a member of the Indiana Pacers for about 45 minutes. And a lot of interesting speculation. He issued a good statement saying that he gives a lot of respect to the Pacers organization. He also did a little bit of a one-on-one and or talked on the phone, I don't know what, but gave some quotes to a website called Anscape. It is an ESPN-owned website that caters to the black sports fan. And he talked about how he feels in being here and that he grew up here, had his child here, so he's happy to be here and run it back. He said, you know, all the right things, but a lot of references were made to how excited he was to go to Indiana. And it's hard for me to buy into that because James Jones said specifically to him, we're going to match any deal. So it's like, go ahead, go do what you want. Go find out what the market will pay you. We're going to be matching it. So it does seem pointless for him to have gotten excited about any other deal unless he didn't take James Jones at his word. And I told you this right after the ending of the season press conference when James Jones says, you know, our plan is to bring everybody back. We believe in this team. We believe in what we've assembled and we plan on bringing everybody back. Well, that was something that I took as, you know, not something to be believed in when he started talking about Chris Paul. I was too worried when he said that about Chris Paul the year before, and James Jones did exactly what he said he was going to do. So when he said the same words again, I told myself I'm not going to make that mistake and told you I think DeAndre Ayton's staying no matter what. I think they're going to match any deal. And then when I got wrapped up into the Kevin Durant conversation, I basically forgot that's what James Jones had said and allowed myself to believe in the speculation of you could have a free agent signing here, a sign and trade there, a, you know, blah, blah, blah. When this has played out exactly as James Jones said it would. And I liked what I heard today in that Anscape article that James Jones told him, this is what we're going to do. So there were no surprises. There was never a moment where DA really gets his hopes up, thinks he's going to be a Pacer, and then he's bitter at the Suns. Now, he could be upset because the Suns could have paid him more. And this is where it gets really interesting. The Suns saved 5 years, $70 million over the course of time by not paying DA the maximum contract they could pay him. They are paying him the max that the Pacers could pay him. Well, it really gets interesting if you dig this deeper, and I wonder how DA feels about it. Number one, Robert Sarver is known as a very cheap owner. He's known as a guy that will insult people in order to save money. And this is the exact type of thing that is proof positive of that. He doesn't care what DA thinks or feels. He says, wait, I can get DeAndre Ayton for 4 years and $130 million, or I can get DeAndre Ayton for 5 years, $170 million. Why wouldn't I just do the $4 million? And look at yourself. I mean, if you're getting ready to buy a car or lease a car, and they said, okay, you can have this car on a two-year lease for $100 or a one-year lease for $20, aren't you going to take the one-year lease for 20 and then ask for another one in a year? Doesn't that make a lot of sense? So from that standpoint, Robert Sarver nailed it. And isn't this just a business? Why should you care about DeAndre Ayton's feelings? It's a business. Yet, you never hesitated on the Devin Booker signing and offering him contract maxes every time you could. So what does DA think about that? I'm just trying to lay out the facts for you. The way I look at it is I love how the Suns have handled this, because I don't know if DA's really going to be a force. I think he's totally dependent on a point guard that can get him the ball in Chris Paul. He doesn't take the ball to the hole. And if he gets it in the block, it's not like he's got these great moves that he puts on people. So because of that, I think he's a great offensive player in a point guard dominated offense. But I don't see him doing more than that, because he's had plenty of opportunities to do that. Remember, he's been here a long time now. So since he hasn't shown you that he can really do well without a point guard anyway, then why pay him on a longer term when you're going to lose Chris Paul? And I don't think Chris Paul's playing for 5 years, and we don't know how long he'll be here. So I like what the Suns did with DA. The question is, what does DA think? Did it harden him? You know, hopefully DA looks at it and is offended the Suns didn't want to give him max money and is willing to put up the numbers to earn a new contract somewhere else in 4 years. I'm a little nervous that DA is going to take it like, well, what I was doing was obviously good enough for a 4 year, $133 million contract, and you insulted me. So I'm going to try even less. I'm worried about that. I'm very worried about that. Now, the flip side of what's happened with DeAndre Ayton and signing that contract today, and I'm assuming it's just because he passed his physical yesterday or today, is why he signed it now. When you're wondering, well, why didn't he sign it earlier? Well, all the Suns have to do is match, and he can't go play for anybody. And if he sits out the year, his contract just reverts back to this same status. So he's still got a match deal and must play for the Suns. So he had zero leverage. He used all of his leverage when he signed that deal with the Pacers. But it seems to me the Suns don't have a lot to offer if you really want to win the Kevin Durant sweepstakes. Now, there's competing opinions going on the Kevin Durant sweepstakes. I don't have one, so it's not from me. Brian Windhorst of ESPN, The Insider, basically says the Mikal Bridges thing is the non-starter. In order for the Nets to package a deal in which Kevin Durant ends up as a Sun, the Nets say they've got to have Mikal Bridges. The Suns say any deal that ends with us getting Kevin Durant includes Mikal Bridges on our team. If we're going to win a championship, we need Mikal Bridges. So as of right now, Mikal Bridges is not up in any trade conversation. And that's really interesting, because wouldn't you save a lot of draft picks, or could you possibly keep Cam Johnson? Can you use the leverage of finally giving in and giving the Nets Mikal Bridges, and it took so long for it to happen? You're able to pull back on the draft compensation. You're able to pull back on the Cam Johnson compensation. You know, I don't know. But right now, both sides are saying it's a non-starter, according to Brian Windhorst. Other people in the media are saying, no matter what's going on here, there's two truths. One, Miami won't stop until Durant is traded. And number two, still nobody's going to be able to put a package together better than the Suns. Because even Cam Johnson, a bunch of draft picks, and getting another team possibly involved is still the best deal out there. The game changer is if Toronto ever includes Scotty Barnes. They're a great pick. I think he was drafted fourth. Gosh, that draft off the top of my head is a little tough. I don't have notes in front of me. Cunningham out of Oklahoma State went to Detroit first. Jalen Green and then Evan Mobley went, but I can't remember who was two and who was three. And then I'm pretty confident that I got it right, that Scotty Barnes was fourth. And I don't know if I'll be proven wrong later on, depending on how well Mobley plays in his career, because he had a wonderful first year with Cleveland. But my opinion, Cade Cunningham was the best player in that draft, and I thought Scotty Barnes was the second best. I love Scotty Barnes. Thought he was fantastic. I saw most of his games at Florida State. And, I mean, not live, but, you know, watching the games on TV. And I can see why Brooklyn's demanding him, and they should. You know, if you're going to trade Kevin Durant, you're going to want something big time. But I think Toronto feels like we just crushed this draft pick and we have cost certainty for a long time. Well, you have to ask yourself, if you're Toronto, if you trade Scottie Barnes for Kevin Durant, you can't talk about health. So I'm removing health from the conversation. You never know if somebody's going to get hurt. But do you think that automatically makes you the clear-cut number one team in the East? See, for me, I don't. I only think you do that trade if you're Toronto by giving up Scottie Barnes for Kevin Durant. If you know the only team that stands in your way are the Warriors, the Suns, or somebody from the West. Because getting to the NBA Finals is worth it. Now, a lot of people would say, oh my gosh, no, you have to win it. I understand why you would say that, but truthfully, give me a 7-game series and a chance to win 4 games, and now I'm right in it. I mean, I have a chance to be a world champion. But you got to go through the gauntlet of your own conference first. And I don't think trading for Kevin Durant and losing Scottie Barnes makes them a guarantee to win it, to win the Eastern Conference. When I say guaranteed to win, of course there's no such thing as a guarantee. The Suns were clearly the best team in the regular season in the West, and look what that got them. But I mean, you're clearly the best team in the East, and I don't think they are. So if they agree with me that there's no reason to give up Scottie Barnes, then the Suns become the only legitimate trade partner for Kevin Durant. It would be the best deal. So then it becomes to the Nets. You know, if you sell your car and you put the sign out, I'll sell it for $20,000 or best offer. Well, do you really mean that? Because if the best offer is $10,000, are you still going to sell it? So maybe it's not best offer. Maybe it's I want $20,000, but I'll negotiate. Well, where do the Nets stand on this? Is it we want Mikal Bridges, we want Scottie Barnes, we want the same price that the Jazz received for Rudy Gobert, or best offer? Or is it you have to match our price or we're not going to do this trade? Which one is it? Because if it's best offer, I still think the Suns get Kevin Durant. I do, because I think they'll offer the best deal. Now, do I think they'll offer enough for Brooklyn to jump on it? No. And that comes into the Kevin Durant thing. Just how bad does Kevin Durant want out? Is he furious? Will he suck it up for a year? Will the Nets not care what he thinks? I'm saying, you know what? Sorry, Kevin, we weren't able to honor your trade request. It's something I don't think they do enough to athletes. You sign a 4-year contract with me, you better be prepared to finish. Don't sign a 4-year contract with me then. I'm making financial decisions based on you being here. I'm selling advertising to companies based on having Kevin Durant for 4 years. I'm making draft decisions based on having you for 4 years. I'm paying you like I've got you for 4 years. And a lot of people say, well, you can't really treat players that way. It's the year of player empowerment. Look at the Steelers. Everybody knows how the Steelers work. Now, the one person that got them to break was TJ Watt. I'm still shocked that the Steelers broke. I thought that was a terrible mistake by the Pittsburgh Steelers to finally give in to somebody. I'm not saying TJ Watt's not great. If you don't know that situation, he had a holdout or a hold in and wasn't practicing, and he still had 2 years left on his deal. And normally the Steelers wait until you have 1 year left. They will not negotiate with somebody who's got 2 years. Well, now they negotiated with TJ Watt. Well, that to me opens a floodgate for anybody else to think they're worth it. If I'm an owner, I lay down the law when it comes to the standard. That way everybody knows before they walk in, these points are non-negotiable. Maybe I wouldn't get a lot of free agents that way, but hopefully I've hired a good GM and I'm good at the draft. And if you draft players like Mikal Bridges, Devin Booker, and DeAndre Ayton, you might be able to then entice free agents. even if they don't like me. But I would say I'm leaning that Brooklyn is the team that Kevin Durant plays for next year. But Miami supposedly won't stop. I don't think Toronto ever has a good reason to get rid of Scotty Barnes. The only other team in this mess is the Suns. I think it's a four-horse race. Nets, Raptors, Heat, Suns. And I only include the Heat because they keep trying, because they're working that hard. I mean, it's almost like somebody's going to bite, aren't they? But I don't think so. I just don't see how they can get together enough pieces from other teams to impress Brooklyn, because Miami doesn't have enough to be given out to everybody else that wants a piece of something in order to give something up. So even though I gave you four teams, I'm really looking at Nets and Suns with the wild card of Toronto buckling under the pressure and giving up Scotty Barnes. All right, coming up next, there's new news again on the Big 12 and the Pac-12. And it's kind of funny. It's a bunch of finger pointing. That's coming up on Doug Franz Unplugged. Early this afternoon, there was a report that came out that the Big 12 and Pac-12 have officially stopped their conversations on future planning, whether it was going to be a merger, whether it was going to be a pillage or some kind of alignment or agreement. But the Big 12 and Pac-12 were talking to each other. What's really interesting about it is both sides, the way I'm reading into it, they're trying to not get into finger pointing because they know they need each other. But it's pretty entertaining to me that both of them are trying to look at it and say the other side just didn't bring enough to the table. I think they're both looking at each other as they're the top dog between the two of them. And therefore, there's no way to make an agreement work. The advantage for the Pac-12 is whatever semblance the Rose Bowl still exists, they've got the Rose Bowl. They also have much bigger markets than the Big 12. The Big 12 has two biggies in Dallas and Houston, huge markets. But really, every other market is kind of a smaller market. I mean, somebody in that conference might tell you, oh, we've got Cincinnati, we've got Orlando. Yeah. But the size of Phoenix and San Francisco and to a lesser extent, but still true, Seattle and Portland. You know, San Francisco washes out Dallas. And then they've got nothing that compares to Phoenix once you've had the washout of Dallas and San Francisco. So from a market standpoint, especially if San Diego State becomes a Pac-12 member, the Pac-12 is bigger and better. But the Big 12 has much better fan engagement. Fans are much more passionate in the Big 12. They spend more money than Pac-12 fans do. And the Big 12 already has three time zones, which normally used to be a terrible thing to have a bunch of time zones. Now, it offers you different TV windows for networks to be able to say, we can have a game that's at noon on the East Coast in Orlando. We can have a game then at the window of 3:30 Eastern in Central Time. And then we can have a BYU game on Mountain Time. And we can start that game late, say 8 o'clock. And now you have a 7 o'clock kickoff on the West Coast. We've got something in every branch. The Big 12 might even be crazy with BYU there and go after UNLV and pick up a school there. And even though UNLV doesn't bring much to the table athletically, you get a great market and where everybody wants to be. And plus UNLV football is moving into the Raider Stadium. So you've got a lot going there. So they broke off talks. What's funny is each side kind of looks at the other one. The Pac-12 claims that the Big 12 came to them on Friday and said, we'd like to explore a full merger. So that's the Pac-12's point of view. Big 12 came to us, want to do a full merger. The Big 12 is saying that the Pac-12 came to them and said, here are our three options. And out of the three options, the Big 12 thought that the merger was better than the other two. So they claim they told the Pac-12, let us think about it. They came to the point after a weekend that they thought about it, and it just doesn't bring enough to the table. So they didn't do it. Even though the Pac-12 says they came to them on Friday, Big 12 says, no, we didn't. We said on Friday we would discuss this and get back to you. And the Pac-12 says they didn't really have full agreement to go into a merger because they don't want the Big 12's television contracts. See, this is where it also gets funny. The Big 12 was locked into their TV deals for 4 years. The Pac-12 was locked into theirs for two. So the Pac-12 is already negotiating new rights. So the only way for this to really work is to allow Texas and Oklahoma out and go to the SEC. And then basically every school in the Big 12 resign from the Big 12 and then join the Pac-12. And if you do that, now your rights are available. But then you've got to be afraid, because what if the Pac-12 doesn't take you? If you resign from the Big 12 and then the Pac-12 says, well, you know, actually, we didn't want you, they could do that. They don't have to invite all of you unless you get a full merger. And if you go with the full merger, now you are bound by the contract rights that the Big 12 kind of wants to get out of. So that's the mess they're in. So each side is saying it just didn't work because the other guy didn't bring enough to the table. I'm kind of entertained by that. Now, here's what this means going forward. The Big 12 thinks they're bigger than the Pac-12. The Big 12 thinks they're more stable than the Pac-12. The question is now, what does ASU think? What does Colorado, Utah, U of A think? Do you sit here and wait to find out the future of Oregon and Washington? Or do you make your move? It's one thing that no one has talked about, really. Everybody is, and myself included, we've always talked about Arizona State in the position of playing defense, running scared because of what happens if Oregon and UW leave, and then where are you going to be? I think it's time that ASU really looks at it and says, wait a minute here. What's a better conference, and let's just create that? And let's start dictating terms here. The number one, my opinion, the best conference for the Pac-12 would be to take San Diego State, take Boise State, take UNLV, and then finally make an offer to BYU before they go to the Big 12 and say, how about this? And I think you've got something good there. I think you're back to being the Pac-12. You've picked up the San Diego market, the Las Vegas market. I don't want to act like the Boise market's that big, but it's, you know, one of the bigger remaining West Coast markets that there are. Or maybe you say no to Boise State and you actually take New Mexico. You get Albuquerque. I don't think that's all that exciting, but you are hunting markets, and it's not like the East Coast where there's a market on every street corner. So if you're ASU, do you like that? If you do that, you are living in fear, always, of UW and Oregon leaving at any minute. If they go, you're not screwed. It just looks terrible. It's just now your conference is nothing. This is going to be kind of funny, since you were, especially if you're an old school ASU fan, that you actually remember the Pac-8 days when you joined in the late 70s. Or if you felt like you were a new member through most of the 80s, and maybe you don't remember the 70s when they joined, but you felt like the new member of the Pac-10. If Oregon leaves and UW leaves, I think ASU is the bellwether school, not in prestige because of the embarrassment that Ray Anderson and Herm Edwards have caused, but because Stanford and Cal, in my opinion, have two of the worst fan bases in college sports. I mean, I was always appalled at how good Stanford is at football, how good of a coach they have in David Shaw, and how empty that building was every time I was in it. And it's a gorgeous stadium for a small school. And it amazed me that that's a Division I football stadium because it's so nice but so small. And if that's the type, and then you look at Cal, and there was, I've never been at a game where there was a lot of people at a Cal game. I think you at ASU, you're now the big school. So there's an old line, you know, in real estate, don't be the most expensive home on your block. Well, I know as an ASU fan, you don't want to succumb to Oregon and UW, but Oregon and UW are more prestigious than you are. And I don't mean that academically. I'm only talking about athletics. You know, they have a richer history. They have better fan support. And they spend more money on athletics than you do. Well, if they're gone, why be in a conference without them? So do you trust going into the Pac-12 if you can't trust them? If you don't trust Oregon and UW, why not go now? Why not go to the Big 12 now? Just get it over with. Say, okay, let's start. Let's start recruiting Texas. And, you know, if USC, UCLA, maybe since the Big 10's bigger and better, there's going to be some talent that maybe isn't good enough to be in the Big 10. You might have an easier time recruiting Los Angeles than you ever had before. Because you can get a lot of three-star guys out of California, which are really good. And now you're recruiting Texas. And you're still keeping your rivalry with U of A. U of A fans, I'm sure you're happy. You're still keeping the rivalry with ASU. You're not sitting around waiting to see what happens. And U of A, you get Kansas. You get a basketball. Big 12 is a great basketball conference. So, I don't know. You want to be aggressive? If you want to be aggressive, just go to the Big 12. The best scenario, in my opinion, for ASU, pick up UNLV, San Diego State, two more teams, stay in the Pac-12 with a fully committed UW in Oregon. And I mean a happy UW in Oregon. But can you really guarantee that they're happy? Can you guarantee they won't pull a USC? If you can't guarantee it, I say go Big 12. Couple thoughts on last night's home run derby and the Diamondbacks draft. I got a neat story about one of the draft picks. It's next on Doug Franz Unplugged. Going to talk baseball in a second, but I just read an incredible article. The Matador Club is a group of Texas Tech Red Raider supporters, and they have announced that they're going to sign every single football player to a one-year $25,000 scholarship. I shouldn't say scholarship, an NIL deal. Now, when I say to a deal, I mean every kid, all 85 scholarships and 15 walk-ons will receive a one-year $25,000 NIL. The collective will have them doing things like speaking about public service, doing public service. There'll be community affairs. There'll be things that you have to be a part of if you're willing to do this. But wow, boy, does that change things in college football? How beautiful. I know BYU had something pretty cool started up by some groups up there, but now you've got, two teams in the Big 12 doing something like that that I know of. If any other schools are doing, sorry, I didn't know. So I don't know if maybe you don't want to join the Big 12, because if you're ASU, Dr. Crow, Ray Anderson, and Herm Edwards won't play in that arena, and everybody else is already there. So that's something that's interesting. A couple things about the home run derby last night. Oh, my gosh. Number one, how about my pick yesterday in versus Vegas that I got it right, that it would be Juan Soto that won. So I'm pretty happy about that. Number two, if you didn't see the introductions, try to Google Acuna Fire, maybe. Robert Acuna Jr. was totally freaked out, and he felt the heat of the pyrotechnic display that went on behind him. And if you've ever sat close in a Suns game, I got lucky a couple times. Jennifer sang the national anthem, so I got to sit real close for a Suns game before. And they were using the fire during introductions, and man, it's crazy how easy it is to feel that as soon as that lights up. And I, Okun Jr. actually reached for the back of his neck and totally freaked out on stage. So that was hilarious. The Rodriguez display, the kid from the Seattle Mariners, how cool is this story? I realize this is still crazy money to us, but keep in mind how poor minor leaguers are as they move their way through the ladder. And not all of these guys even eat well because they send their meal money home to their home countries because they're providing for a whole family. Rodriguez makes around $700,000 this year as a Mariner. He made $750,000 for coming up in second place last night. He made more money hitting exhibition home runs than he will all year. I mean, what a change for that young man. And he seemed like such a great kid. I know so little about him that I don't want to gush. I mean, I would hate to find out he's a terrible dude, and here I am gushing about him. But I loved listening to that kid. I loved watching that kid. It was a joy. So how cool of it, or is it of for his life to change that way? So congratulations. Not that he's, you know, with Doug Fron, I don't think he's enlisted in the Unplugged Army, but I'm still got somebody now that I want to root for. So that was awesome. Albert Pujols and the fact that all players gathered around him at the end like he was Ted Williams, that was pretty cool. And the fact that he advanced and got out of the first round was pretty cool. So I enjoy the Home Run Derby. I like it a lot. All right, the last thing on the agenda is a little bit of D-backs just to go over some things. Number one, there's an article written by Nick Pecoro that talks about Gonzo's critical comments of the Diamondbacks during a broadcast. I like Nick Pecoro a lot. I think he's an excellent writer. I don't know. I don't want to rip the column because I don't know how else I would have written it. You know, if I can't improve it, then who am I to rip it? Is kind of my feelings. But I did get the sense with the headline and the tone, it was like Gonzo ripped him, like just ripped him. And there was nothing that was misquoted in the column. And it was written fairly. I don't know if I was just turned off by the headline saying negative comments, but they were negative comments. So I don't know how else to put it. If you didn't hear it, I was watching the game, not live, but I saw it on the DVR. And Gonzo was talking about, especially after the botched pop-up, how comfortable guys are. That you normally when you play poorly, you're worried about losing playing time, and guys on this team don't seem to be worried about losing play time. And there's complacency that's there. And then he went into Ketel Marte saying, and I don't know what's going on with him. He can't stay healthy. And, you know, he's not performing the way he was. That I love that Gonzo said it. There's pride that he takes in what it means to be a Diamondback. And I have been saying this for a while. Again, I like Torey Lovello. I think he knows the game. But my number one critique of him has been that exact point, that he gives players too long of a rope. That if they're not getting it done, bench them. Show them that there's consequences. And I don't think that's been done nearly enough in the Torey Lovello time frame. And of all people, they did it to Seth Beer. That's the one thing I didn't understand. Seth Beer gets the opening day home run, doesn't play the next day. Starts off on fire, batting over 400. So you finally start giving him regular bats, and he goes into a slump, and boom, he's done. So he can bat over 400, and it took forever for you to let him have regular at-bats. But the split second he struggles at regular at-bats, we're sending him down. But look how long of a rope Pavin Smith got. Now, Pavin Smith seems like a great dude, so nothing negative on him as a person, but this is a business. Do your job, or let's find somebody that can. And when I hear about Jordan Lawler in the minors, when I hear about Corbin Carroll in the minors, I say call people up and don't tell me, well, he's not ready yet. Well, call him up and see if he's ready. And if he struggles, send him back down. I hate the argument, well, you might mess with his psyche. Listen, if that messes with his psyche, he's not a Major League Baseball player anyway. I get the fact that some guys can't handle New York. Some guys can't handle the White Sox fans. Some guys can't handle the pressure of certain cities. I do appreciate that, acknowledge that, understand that. It is a different beast to play at Fenway Park. The advantage is there's juice on top of juice. I mean, guys are jacked. It sounds like I'm talking steroids. Guys are jacked. I mean, the energy, if you ever go to a game at Fenway, it's unbelievable. And it does affect players. And you can feed off of it. And it does keep you focused because everybody's watching. And when you play in front of a 12,000 seats or 12,000 people in a big stadium, you know, you can tend to lose your focus. I'm acknowledging the human element. I'm the one sitting here talking at midnight into a small office while I'm supposedly on vacation because I can't do any of those things. And I never could. I could not hit a curveball. If you know the old movie Major League, I was kind of Pedro Serrano with warning track power, not home run power. I could crush fastballs to the warning track and make an out, or swing and miss on a curveball and make an out. Whatever you want, I can make an out for you. These guys, I feel like no matter how long they struggle, they're going to get an opportunity. Well, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with the trade deadline. So that number one, my opinion was go Gonzo. Thank you. Go for it, Gonzo. But I think within the next 2 weeks, Christian Walker is gone, and I think David Peralta is gone. And I'm really interested to see how the other players on the team respond. And if Ketel Marte can't handle any criticism, then we've got a problem because he deserves it. I mean, he has not remotely played up to that contract, and he has had years of drifting mentally out there, of losing concentration. And to me, winners do not lose concentration. Championship players do not lose concentration. You're out there to do a job, do the job. Looking at some of the draft picks, it looks like the Diamondbacks hit a home run. But again, I can talk to you like crazy about the NBA draft, the NFL draft. I watch so much college basketball and college football. I really feel knowledgeable about those subjects. I am kind of clueless when it comes to the baseball draft. So everything, anything I compliment, it's because I read it somewhere from somebody I respect who does know, but I'm still just regurgitating an opinion. But if you want general themes, a couple pitchers they drafted after Tommy John surgery and they don't care. They believe in what they're seeing from the guys and they think they're going to be fine. Drew Jones is a stud. He's the one that got number two overall. I'm excited to see what happens with a young man by the name of Dylan Ray. He was drafted in the fourth round. And Jennifer and I were married in 96, and then we left Ohio for Alabama in 98. And in that year, I became the play-by-play voice of a high school called Bob Jones High School in Madison, Alabama. So I did their football games, and I did that for 5 years. And Dylan Ray went to Bob Jones High School and then had Tommy John in 2021 and came back as a reliever this year for Alabama. And so I admit, I don't know the young man at all. I was long gone. But if he was born in the Huntsville, Alabama area, then I was there at the same time he was. And I don't know. Maybe that's weird. Like, okay, Doug, I don't care. For me, that's cool because I loved living there. I loved Huntsville, Alabama. And I loved being the play-by-play voice of that high school. And it was a great indoctrination into Southern football. Being a Yankee doing a Southern high school football game, you can see a lot of people were a little frustrated I didn't have an accent, but eventually they grew to like me. So I'm rooting for Dylan Ray. I don't understand the Pinter pick. He must be an unbelievable shortstop. Andrew Pinter was a fifth-round pick out of BYU. His offensive numbers are 298, 379, 458 at BYU. Those are wonderful pro numbers. college numbers, I'd like to see him a little higher if I'm drafting you in the fifth round. So I'm wondering if he is just an amazing defensive ball player. I don't know for sure on that. Their third round pick, Nate Savino. I couldn't believe this stat. More strikeouts than innings pitched. 76 strikeouts, 78 innings pitched while at UVA. That's impressive. There's another shortstop out of high school that was drafted out of Nogales. So an Arizona kid who's committed to U of A. His senior year, listen to this, batted 485. He walked 32 times, struck out three. Man, when I was in high school, I could strike out three times in a game. This kid struck out three times his senior year. I hope I don't butcher his name. Dimitroy Chrysantis is, I think, reasonably close how you say it. So he's a shortstop from Nogales High School, committed to U of A, and put up numbers like that. They got a catcher from Oregon State, and Oregon State is kind of becoming a catcher's factory. So that might be good alone that they got a catcher out of there. But in 2022, he had more walks than strikeouts as a college player, 22 walks, 21 strikeouts. That was really impressive to me. And then the 10th round pick, Brett Johnson, out of SIU Edwardsville, which stands for Southern Illinois University. Listen to this slash, 329, 448, 668. If you ever hear somebody say your slash, that's your batting average, then your on-base percentage, then your slugging percentage. So really, if somebody reads you a slash line, you're listening for the magic numbers of 300, 400, 500. That's an elite player at 300, 400, 500. Okay? This Brett Johnson kid is at 300, 400, 600. 328, 448, 668. In his 105 games, he almost had an RBI a game. Played in 105 games at SIU Edwardsville, had 96 RBIs. So just a couple bits and pieces of things that I picked up. General theme-wise with the Diamondbacks draft, a lot of position players. And that's interesting because they're kind of getting loaded on good position players, and they could really use some more pitching in their farm system. And they only drafted, to my knowledge, three pitchers so far in the top 10 rounds. And two of them had Tommy John. So it's kind of a strange strategy. I don't know enough to critique it, but they know what they're doing on the draft. The Diamondbacks have been killing it the last couple of years. Thanks for listening to my Tuesday vacation edition of Doug Franz Unplugged. And don't forget about Friday. I hope to see you out there Friday. The parlay will be at Price in the 202 for happy hour. I'll be there anytime between 5 and 8. I'll be there the whole time between 5 and 8. Please stop by, say hi, and help me impress my gambling bosses by you showing up. It's a sanctioned event. Keep your general status. I'd love to see you. That's Friday the 22nd. And that's it for Tuesday the 19th. I'll see you tomorrow.